When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sarah Jenks Daly, and welcome to Late Night Lit. Our guest this month is one of my favorite people and favorite writers. And full disclosure, he's also my boss. But I promise those things are mutually exclusive. This month marks the 8th anniversary of Late Night with Seth Meyers. And since the very first week of the show, both Seth and our producer Mike Shoemaker have championed literature on the program. Even in the midst of hosting a nightly talk show, Seth somehow found the time to write his first book, a wonderful children's book called I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, which will be published on March 15th. It's available to pre-order now wherever you buy your books, but of course, we recommend heading to your local or favorite independent bookseller to buy it. We chatted about Seth's early memories of reading, the process of writing a children's book, and if his sons are fans of his work. Now here's my chat with Seth. Okay, we're here with Seth Meyers. Welcome to Late Night Lit, or welcome back, I should say.
Thank you very much. as an author, it's always been my dream to be a guest on Late Night Lit. I love your work, Sarah. I talk like an author now.
Yeah.
Now that I've written a book.
Really, really quiet and
very thoughtful.
Good pauses.
Considered. Mm-hmm. Every vocab word perfect.
Well, I am really excited we get to do this in person because last time we did this, it was like separate office Zooms.
Yeah.
When we talked.
This is really nice.
As
we take our tiny steps back to normal, it is nice to be in the same room together.
Yes, it is. Okay, so we're here to talk about your first book, which is the children's book you wrote.
Yeah.
And it was the shortest book I've read in terms of research for this podcast, so that was really great.
Isn't it great? I've done a fair amount of press, and the most wonderful thing is people say, I've read your book, and I believe them. Because let's be honest here, we try very hard. Now, I should know, you've read every book, not just of the authors we've had on, but of authors we choose not to have on. You're reading the full books. There are times where we have authors on where I have maybe only cracked the first 50 or 100 pages. And I stay to
very
them.
Few times.
Very few times. I try very hard to read the whole book. But I, at no point when you said to me just now, I read your book, did I think, I hope she finished it.
I finished it. Okay, so your mom, Hillary, who we are all a big fan of here, she did some book recommendations for the podcast in November.
Yeah.
And as part of that, she mentioned that she used to take you to the library as a kid every week.
Yeah.
Was that one of your first memories of reading in books?
Very much so. And the thrill of picking out your own book. Once you reach the point that it's probably the first thing where you develop a taste, your own personal taste is kids' books. It's not like at that age my parents were letting me pick what TV shows to watch or anything like that.
So,
And I think that's the first time you start to understand the difference between the style of authors and the style of artists. It was a really cool thing.
Are there books you remember either that they picked out or read to you or that you picked out on your own that still remain favorites or resonate with you still to this day?
Richard Scarry books, which are a huge deal with my boys, were books I loved a great deal. There was a book called Moose, which my parents recently brought for the kids to read because my parents saved some books. And Moose is a very interesting, it's a good book for the moment because it's basically a Cold War allegory.
Really?
It's a moose who sits in the middle of a field and there are bears. And the more you read it, as an adult, I read it and you realize, oh, those are Russians. And they're throwing sticks across the field at an eagle who's throwing rocks back. So it's a sticks and stones.
Okay.
Throwing them back and forth. And the poor moose who is just in this field that's getting cluttered with sticks and stones. And my parents brought that, which is a great book. And I apologize that I don't know the author's name off the top of my head. But the great thing about this copy of the book, and I know it's the original book, is it obviously had been left in a bathtub overnight. And my parents and my mom has probably put some heavy weights on it over the years, but you can never get the water out of a book.
Wait, I have a question. The eagle is obviously America.
Yeah.
Who is the moose?
I think the moose is anyone who is caught in the middle.
Okay.
It's very 70s. I think it's 70s. It has a 70s feel to it because it ends with the moose takes...
LSD?
The moose takes LSD and just like goes to town on the other. Like deer. No, so... He takes the sticks and stones that have littered around his house and he builds a new beautiful house that's shaped like a heart and all the other animals who have been enlisted to fight the war of the bear and the eagle then go to the moose because they realize peace is more...
It's preferable.
Yeah.
More. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that is very 70s. So the idea for the book, I know you told me and I think you've talked about this a little bit, came because you had actually told this story to your boys as you were reading, like, bedtime story to them.
Well, I knew I was going to write a book, and then I formulated the idea for the book, and then before I put pen to paper, I would tell the story to the boys in their crib at night.
Okay, so you came up with the idea.
Yes.
And then you sort of edited it through them.
Yeah.
How was that process?
It was great. It is a book about facing your fears and having fears, and so the worst outcome would have been if the book was too scary.
Right.
And so there were a few times the kids would say, that part's too scary. And it was very helpful to, you know, sort of see it through their eyes and change stuff. I will say there's one tiny thing. I told them the story. Then as the art started coming in from this wonderful illustrator, Rob Saig Jr., who, let's be honest, did the far harder of the two jobs involved in writing this book. He would send line drawings that were sort of like storyboards, and I would show those to the kids. And they had so many different windows of opportunity to tell me if there was a problem with the book. And when the final hard copy came out, Axel, the three-year-old, pointed at one thing and basically said, why is that like that? And I'm like, buddy, why did you wait? You waited till it was too late. 50 times I've shown you this book.
So your dad, Larry.
Yeah.
You started telling stories to Ash and Axel, I'm assuming, because this was something that your parents did for you.
Yeah.
Or your dad did to you. Because I remember Kevin Miller, one of our producers here, mentioned to me that I think your dad told us this story that he used to tell you and Josh stories, and one of them was about baked potato kids.
Potato kids. My brother and I loved baked potatoes, and the baked potato kids were basically our superhero characters, and the villain was Mr. Waste Food.
Okay.
And so Mr. Waste Food.
That's another good allegory.
Yeah, it's really good. It was about people who waste food, and then the baked potato kids would always enter. And the part that would make my brother and I lose our mind is my dad would start doing ba-da-bum, 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 ba-bum, 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 and that was the entrance song for the baked potato kids. So that was, the baked potato kids was a huge story. The other thing he used to do, and, you know, again, we've talked at length on this show about the fact that my family has had a sheepdog named Albert. I think it's 6 now. So uninterrupted since I was about 7 years old, we've had an Albert in the household. And my dad would tell the Sheepdog Chronicles, which were stories about Albert's ancestors. And as I got older, I couldn't believe that my dad was coming up with these stories every night about, you know, my memory was, how did he come up with all these stories? So then my kids, you know, last year, were in bed and my dad was telling him a story, and he told him a sheepdog story. And the story was just Rapunzel, but he changed all the characters to sheepdogs. And I was this real, I realized, oh, you weren't, he's like, no, I would take known IP. That's intellectual property. And I would just change it to sheepdogs. And I felt a lot better about what I had considered my own lack of imagination and my failure to come up with stories like that.
Do you think Larry has a book in him? I mean, The Baked Potato Kids is his own IP.
I think my dad's book would be his advice on being a parent. I think that that would be where he would land. I don't think he'd want to write a book for kids. I think he'd want to write a book for parents.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That would be good. You could do the foreword.
Yeah. The foreword would be short. And it would consist entirely of this. Take it with a grain of salt.
Were you surprised at the process? I know you mentioned, like, you came up with this idea and storyboarded it. Were you surprised at what the process entailed in the amount of work that it was?
Once I turned in my part of it, I was surprised at how long the rest of it took. And because, again, it's just easier to write an idea than it is to draw an idea. One is physical labor and the other is sort of the mind's eye. And so, to be honest, I think this book was supposed to come out in September. And that's the other thing, not to get too in the weeds on publishing, but you realize these imprints, and I would imagine I'm slotted into some, you know, a celebrity author, you know, child penguin imprint. Like, they don't have infinite slots. They want to only, you know, they slot one, you know, every month. And so it actually would have been a full 2 years from when I wrote it to when it came out, save for the fact that an earlier slot opened up. And that, to me, was mind-blowing.
Yeah, it is surprising how long this stuff sort of takes, especially when I think you make a television show every day, like, from scratch, and it's the final product, and you're like, well, we can do this, so...
I mean, thank God I have this as the main thing. Because it was the gratification was way, way too delayed for me.
Yeah. You mentioned the illustrator. Did you have specific ideas of scenes you knew you wanted to be illustrated? Or was that something that kind of was like a collaboration once he started?
Total collaboration. I also realized even now reading kids' books every night, three a night, everybody, made a big mistake early on. Where we said three a night, and now their tastes are trending towards a longer book, and they won't budge off three. They act like three is a constitutional right.
Is it three per, or is it three combined?
No, three combined, which I will say that's another problem, because we do now have three kids, but the five-month-old obviously isn't a part of this, and choosing three with two votes is also a problem, because I should have just... What I'd love to talk them down to is, I think if it was two, we'd all be a lot happier. But that's not... I think they're very smart. They know if they give this away, they're never getting it back. Like Crimea. So here's the thing. I don't have a great visual sense of what picture you should show for the text. And I also, being an avid comic book reader, incorrectly assume there'd be a lot more pictures for this than there are. Because in a comic book, you can have six frames a page. And so in my head, there would always be, and then up here, you'll have this moment, and down here. And Rob, who's very good, expressed to me and showed me, which was an even better way of expressing it, kids just need often need one big picture to go with the text. You don't need to show them everything that you're saying, because part of it is their imagination still at work. You know, they see a picture, they hear the words, and they put the rest together in their head.
Right. You mentioned that Axel gave you a little bit of feedback.
Yeah.
Kind of late. Now that the book is an actual book.
Yeah.
Have they been more excited about adding it into the three-book repertoire at all?
This probably isn't the smartest thing to say on a piece of promotion. On the promotional book tour. I genuinely think they love the book. They're very excited to give copies of the books to their friends. And their friends...
That's sweet.
Yes. And I'm hearing from friends' parents the book is very popular. Their favorite page is the dedication, because it's their names. And they have read it three times, I think. So three times they chose it. The other day, and again, this is because you're a friend, Sarah. I couldn't sit here and lie to you. I heard, when they went off to their little bookshelf to pick their books, I heard Axel, the three-year-old, say to Ash, the five-year-old, should we do, he doesn't have a lisp, I'm just adding it. Should we do Daddy's Bear and Rabbit book? And I heard my older son, Ash, and if there are any parents out there, you will appreciate how gutting this was. I heard Ash say, no. That was it. It was, he said it like he knew it would hurt my feelings. Like he didn't want to, because usually he would just say, no, I don't like that book. But this was very much, no. I'm justifying it by the fact that they've spent so much time with it as well. Because I, you know, I've told them the story so many times.
You've talked a lot about on the show that they aren't really, granted, they're not really old enough to understand what hosting a late night show is, but that they're not really interested that you do that.
They are interested by the physical space of the theater, the studio.
Right.
They, coming to they see think you. It's really, they don't come to see me. They just think it's insane. Not insane. They're riveted by the fact that I sit at a desk and 180 people have seats that look at me. Like, I don't think I think they think that's great. Because they both want to just be stared at all day. They think everything they do should be a show. So they like that part. They are very excited about the fact that my picture is on the back of the book. They like that a great deal. And the other thing about that is there's a photo of me on the back, and then Rob has drawn the rabbit and the bear sort of holding up the frame. And Axel has a lot of questions about that. Questions make me worry about his cognitive thinking. Like, why is the bear, where you were there with the bear? I'm like, oh, buddy, that's a drawing. This is a picture and that's a drawing.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
I feel very lucky to have the opportunity to have talked to you about so many great books and authors we've had on the show. And you have, from the jump of the show, said that you love having authors on because they're such great storytellers. I know you to be such a great storyteller, too. And I think so much of that is because you've had the ability to talk to people. A lot of it, I think, is innate. And you have such a large background in stand-up comedy, so you know how to craft a joke. Do you think that helped? All of that helped you, like, craft this story?
Yes. I think this story, if I could parallel it with any previous style of writing I've done, is probably closest to sketch comedy writing. The rule of threes exists within the body of this. There's a repeated phrase. So it was conceived in my head looking back. I didn't know at the time. I realized, this was like what writing a SNL premise sketch. The premise being a bear who's too scared and doesn't want to admit to it and the things that he has to face along the way. So that was part of it, certainly the internal part of it. And then I think it's fair to describe my stand-up style as storytelling, and you need to have an ending. And so that was the other thing. And when you read a lot of kids' books, I certainly appreciate that my kids are invested when there are stakes.
Right.
They don't necessarily have to be, you know, high stakes, but they like that the little engine that could, it doesn't just end with,
still on the track.
Well, it's too soon to know.
No, it's true. And that's, I think, also what makes a good talk show story. Is when the guest comes with a story that has an end and doesn't just trail off into nothing.
Or they think they have an end. And I should know, we think they have an end, right? I don't want to just put it on the guest. Oftentimes, we're aware that they have a story to tell. But when they get to the end, the audience didn't know it was the end.
Right.
That's, I think, sometimes when you realize the importance not just of the story, but of the act of telling the story.
Yes. But you're very helpful helping them there. Do you have any books that you are looking forward to reading to Ash and Axel and Adelaide, maybe when she gets older, that you loved when you were a kid?
Well, There's something I'm very excited about, although I'm realizing I have miscalculated a long-term plan of mine that started when I was in my 20s, I guess. A lot of people my age were reading the Harry Potter books when they came out. And I said, I'm not going to read those books until I have kids. Mostly, and I should note at the time, mostly as a way to shame my friends who were reading what I believed to be at the time children's books. And I was basing this on the cover art. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very easy now for us all to say, oh, but it was a whole world and beautiful films. And in the beginning, you look at that first cover, that wasn't for that wasn't for me. And I was very, I'm very excited because, you know, all I hear from friends who read it when they were, you know, my age and then are reading it to the kids is how wonderful that whole journey is. But, of course, my wife read the books when they came out. And so she doesn't want to just cede the reading of these books to me. She's not going to let me do it.
Oh, you might have to share.
I think we're going to have to share. Which, look, behind the scenes, we talk about how well Alexia and I share a fair amount. I don't think it's going to be. I think it's going to be a real classic Barren Eagle situation. But, yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. And then Roald Dahl, we did Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. We did The Fantastic Mr. Fox. That's exciting. James and the Giant Peach, which my son, who knows better, has only ever called James Peach, which is the best shortening. That in his mind, the guy's last name was Peach. So the whole thing was a crazy coincidence.
Speaking of childhood authors, this is my segue. You're doing an event with Judy Blume in mid-March to celebrate the publication of the book. And she's been on the show here. And I remember how excited you were when she was coming on.
Yes.
Is that one of those people that you talk about that was instrumental to you as a kid? So it's kind of surreal to be like, oh, this person is coming to talk to me on my talk show.
Well, you know, there is that thing that Judy Blume, before she knew me, right? I feel like Judy Blume, for anybody who read her as a kid, respected your intelligence. She was one of, you know, that she wrote, she did not write for kids. She wrote stories for kids. I don't know. You know the distinction?
Yeah, it wasn't condescending.
She didn't write down to you. And there were bigger ideas. I think the first sequel I was excited for was Super Fudge, you know, before Empire Strikes Back. I think that the idea that characters could come back in different books was deeply exciting to me. And I think it was a good time to grow up because of those kinds of books. You know, Beverly Cleary as well. You know, we're reading a lot of those Ramona books. We listen to those actually as books on tapes on longer drives. And, you know, there's very real bigger ideas than you would think are appropriate for kids, but are so great for kids to listen to because they're always told through the kids' eyes.
Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah, so I'm very excited that I get to do a book event with Judy Blume, who is also deeply lovely as a person. You know, I had to tweet that I was doing this book event with Judy Blume, and I wish I could show you my drafts folder for the tweets.
How many are there, do you think?
It was a lot of, like, are you there, God? It's me, Seth. Can you get Judy Blume to host my book event? Tell Margaret to get in line. Like, just...
I did love that book.
Yeah, well, there, you know, again, way bigger ideas than you would think.
The remarkable thing about her to me as a kid was... there were books that were being assigned in school by her, and also I would want to go to the library and read a book by her. And that didn't really cross over that much for me.
Yeah. I'm trying to think the first time that started happening, where you read a book that was assigned in school and then thought, oh, I'm going to go. Well, I feel like there was a Jack London book we read, maybe Call of the Wild or something, but never made me want to go read. I remember reading Travels with Charlie, that John Steinbeck book.
Oh, I never read that.
It's a bit of a... pun intended, dog. And I think, like, it was the wrong one to make us read, because then I put off Steinbeck for a long time because they made me read, like, his last book that was a weird travelogue. They probably, I think, huge chunks were made up.
Okay, lastly, I know this question might be slightly annoying because you're currently promoting a book, but do you think you'll write another one?
I would love to write another one. You know, look, only on an ego level... I would want to do this again if it was a book that I heard people really liked. If people don't love it, I'm not going to, like, try to go prove them wrong. But I would love to write a chapter book. I think that those are a really special relationship for kids and a different kind of writing. Also, I put myself in this real jackpot, which is, again, Alexi, when my wife puts the kids to bed, it's one story. You each get a kiss, you each get a hug, good night, and they just go to bed. I have, like, negotiated myself into the worst position. It's three books, and then I have to sing them a song about Frisbee, and then I have to tell them a superhero story, and they keep learning about new superheroes, and so they'll just give me a roster of 11 superheroes I need to tell a story about. The amount of plotting I'm doing, but sometimes I just hit a breaking point, and I'll say, Daddy's all out of stories. And they'll very helpfully say, well, just think about it while you're reading us this book. And I'll say, that's not how the human brain works. You can't read a story and then think. So maybe that part of it is just I want to write a really long, like a really like a 5,000 word book that I can just slowly read to my kids so I can stop having to come up with superhero stories every night.
I didn't realize that you were putting as much time into that as you probably put into corrections each week.
It's basically, yeah. And by the way, my kids are jackals as well. They correct the amount. Axel screamed at 5:30 this morning. And the problem is the boys share a room now. And so you let him scream because you know it's bull. Before you go in, you know it's bull. But he's screaming so loud that you worry he's going to wake up his brother, which seems unfair. And so I'll go in at 5:30. He's like, you didn't have Aquaman in the story. Like he woke up and remembered that the story I told last night, despite his request, did not have Aquaman. And so that's kind of what I'm up against.
Well, the book is wonderful, so if you do choose to write
it. And I do hope you finish it. Just stick with it, Sarah. I know.
Only a few pages to go. Thank you, Seth.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much for having me. And can I say, Sarah, thank you for everything you do for authors. But for real, this is very exciting to be on Late Night Lit, and I'm so glad you do it. And thank you so much for making authors a robust part of the show.
Well, thank you for letting me do that and being such a big promoter of them.
Well, thank
You're
you
the best.
Thank you for thanking me.
You're the best. This month, we asked Michael Shore, Emmy-winning writer and creator of The Good Place and Parks and Rec, for a book recommendation after his appearance on Late Night in January. His own book, How to Be Perfect, The Correct Answer to Every Moral Question, is available now and is absolutely worth a read.
Hi, this is Michael Shore, author of the new book, How to Be Perfect, which is my understanding of ethics and moral philosophy, but it's fun and conversational and not boring. The last book that I read that I really loved is called No One Is Talking About This by Patricia Lockwood. She is a poet by trade. This is her first novel. It came out last year and won a bunch of shiny trophies and prizes. And it's almost like she invented a new genre. It's told from the point of view of a woman who is sort of obsessed with the internet. And it's really hard to describe. You kind of just have to read it. It's not very long. You can read it pretty quickly. And it really nails very precisely the experience of thinking about the internet too much. And I just thought it was fantastic. I highly recommend it to anyone who has ever used the internet.
This has been Late Night Lit. My thanks to Seth Meyers, Mike Shoemaker, Michael Shore, Lauren Roseman, Lauren Manesevit, Matt Ryman, Jay Johnson, and Ross Leupold. Our theme music was written and performed by the 8G Band. For Late Night with Seth Meyers, I'm Sarah Jenks Daly. Thank you for listening and happy reading.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.